This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network's studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is sponsored by Larson & Larson, intellectual property lawyers. Are you a writer, illustrator, or inventor? You need to protect your valuable intellectual property. The attorneys at Larson & Larson can help you. And for a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They're my lawyers. They should be yours. Oh, it's so exciting today. I have one of the greatest writers of all time, and certainly, without a doubt, I think the acclaimed and best detective writer around. It's Lawrence Block. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Well, you know, Larry, I'm so happy to talk to you. How's everything in New York?
Very good.
What's the weather like up there?
Cold but clear.
Cold but clear, but it doesn't matter. New York is always, always a fantastic place.
Well, I love it here.
I know you do. All of your books, it's like an homage always to the city, because you love, it's so apparent that you love New York. And, you know, as I think all writers across America, and especially those of us who come from little country towns where we start reading at a young age and then we dream of writing, our dream is always to land up in New York City. And so it's always fun to, you know, read books set in New York City for us.
Well, it's been fertile ground for me, I must say.
You know, you've seen New York through so many years. Let's just talk for a moment about your love for New York, because, you know, one of the books that I want to talk about, and it's a little city, which is, you know, and it's not
small, your more, town.
Small. I'm sorry, small town.
Yeah.
Do you want to give the quote?
The epigraph quote is from John Gunther, and I don't have it all. The essence of it is that it's a big city. It's the most powerful, most dynamic city, and so on and so on. And he says, but it becomes a small town when it rains.
Yes, I'm sorry, I said little town. I'm like, yeah. I come from a little town, and this is a small town. Small Town was a book that really captured what happened and the attitude of New Yorkers after 9/11. And it was a very moving book.
Thank you. It was a book that I had in mind for many years. I thought that I would like to write a big multiple viewpoint novel that contained as much of the city as I could fit in it. And I started work on the book, and I had a chunk of it written, and it was coming along nicely. And then 9/11 happened, and the whole world changed, and the city changed utterly. And I thought, well, I can throw this away. But I set it aside, and about 6 months later, I guess it was, I looked at it again and saw that I would have to write a somewhat different book, but that the ingredients were there. And I went and got to it, and what I wrote essentially is a big, broadly based thriller set, you might say, in the ashes of 9/11. That's a novel set during the aftermath.
And of course, this is a standalone book, not one of. Of course, you've written so many wonderful series that we'll talk about. But as a standalone book, you know, sometimes they don't get the recognition I think they deserve. They're because, you know, people will when there's a series, they'll sometimes go back to the series. And that's why I particularly wanted to mention it, because it's wonderful on the internet you can get this.
I'm so glad that you did. That's very true what you observed. The standalone book may get full attention right when it comes out, but later on, the continuing life of it is not as strong, because people will come to a series and then will go into the backlist and read all the books in the series. Standalones that came out a few years before they got interested in a particular writer, they're less apt to find their way to.
Exactly. So, that's why I really enjoy, I love doing this show and promoting writers, for their current books, but not just for their current books, because so often, their really great books are like a few years ago, and it's wonderful now on the internet that we're able to, whether it's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your wonderful website, because I want readers to go to your website. You have one of the best writers' websites, and it's, of course, lawrenceblock.com, and it is a really great website, and people can go there and find all the list of all your books. But I think Small Town is, for people who haven't read your work, if they haven't been into detective books and the type of books that you write, I think Small Town is a great start to really, you hit it there with this one. You're writing, I always like to, when for me, the biggest compliment for a writer is to say he's solid, because it's so solid. There are no cracks. You get into it and you almost forget that you're reading a book. You're in the story.
Oh, thank you. That's very high praise. Incidentally, regarding my website, I should say that it's anything that's good about it is the result of a woman who's right in your neck of the woods in St. Petersburg.
Oh, who's that?
That's Erin Mitchell, who manages my website.
Wow, she does a great job.
Doesn't she?
Fantastic, because it's just so wonderful. Of course, one of the things we're going to talk about today, I love the part where you are advising writers, and of course we're going to be talking a lot about that. I want to mention your latest book, the one that just came out recently, and it's just. Now, this is, of course, can I say, it's a little bit erotic.
I bet you're talking about The Girl with the Deep Blue Eyes.
Yeah, The Girl with the Deep Blue Eyes. And, it's it's one of your more recent books, right? It's recent?
Yes, it came out, I think it was in September.
Yeah, September.
So whatever that is, about 6 months ago.
And, it's... it is it is erotic.
I like the way my film agent described it when he was pitching it. He told people it was like James M. Cain on Viagra.
that's true. It is, and of course, it's probably the book that you're really pushing right now. But this is a beautiful thing about our age. There are many things to worry about in book publishing world, but the fact that when somebody finds a writer that they really enjoy, they can go and really start from the beginning and just read all of the books, and it's a fantastic ability that we didn't have years ago.
It's quite wonderful. I have virtually everything that I've ever written is either in print or published or coming back very shortly, and that's very gratifying. They're books that I thought were. Except for the occasional copy and the occasional bookstore or church rummage sale, I thought they were gone forever, and now they're available.
I know. I went through a period years ago before the internet of I wanted to read everything Helen McGinnis ever wrote, but you couldn't find everything. It was so hard to find them, and then so now it's such a thrill to be able to just go on and people will pick up a book. Now, for example, your Matthew Scudder series, which is a fantastic series, and many people might not have started reading it until the movie came out with Liam Neeson.
Very true.
And I think after that, they saw the movie. Of course, it was called A Walk Among the Tombstones. And so once that's what happens with books. I mean, people always say, you know, I ask authors, well, has it been optioned? Has it been made into a film? And one of the reasons you want it optioned and made into a film is so that people will go back and actually read the book.
Very true. Very true. There was a huge spike in sales of the book, both ebook and paperback, when the film came out.
And I must say, I think the book is much better than the film. You know,
well, there's such different media the two. I think that given the attendant problems of translating one to the other, I think
they did a good job.
Did a wonderful.
Yeah, no, he did.
Know.
He did a good job. I suppose as much as, and I love Liam Neeson. I mean,
yes.
I think he's my top favorite actor. I always get the feeling that he didn't love New York as much as you love New York, you know, or
oh, I think he does. Liam's a New Yorker.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, I know, but somehow I had a feeling he didn't quite go to the Matthew Scudder level of it. You know, so this series of Matthew Scudder books, which you started that, long time ago.
Yeah, in the mid-70s. So it's just about 40 years ago that the first one was published.
And, of course, that's, to put it in a nutshell, I suppose, ex-New York City cop who was an alcoholic and who does unlicensed private investigation work, and that of course was the whole premise of the movie A Walk Among the Tombstones and all of your books. I think, how many books have you done in the Scudder series?
There's 17 novels, and one that I think of as the 18th novel, which is it's called The Night and the Music, and it's a collection of 11 short stories and novelettes about Scudder.
Well, I love. Well, tell me about Scudder. Where did he come from, and what's your favorite part of the Scudder stories?
Well, I don't know exactly where it came from. It was a suggestion of my agent at the time, and I said this was back in the 70s, that I develop a serious character who was a tough New York cop. And I realized as I started to brainstorm it that I'd be much happier writing about an ex-cop than a current member of the department, that I wanted more of an outsider's perspective. And then the character evolved. What's been interesting to me about Scudder, and I think what has enabled me to write about him for as long as I have, is that I've allowed him to change and evolve and age from one book to the next. So that, you know, Matthew Scudder now is 40 years older than when I started writing about him, which is, I suppose, perfectly sensible, because I, too, am 40 years older than when I started. That's been interesting. His life has changed. In the early books, he's a very heavy alcoholic drinker. In the fifth book of the series, which is pivotal, the book is about as much about his coming to terms with his alcoholism as with the case itself. And then he's continued, and his life has changed, and he's gotten older. And I think he's probably retired now. I think I'm probably done writing about him. But I've thought that in the past, and it turned out to be misinformed, as it were. So when people ask, what's going to be. I tell them I honestly don't know.
You never know when he's going to pop back into your head, and
that's right.
You have to write. Now, my favorite, I'm going to tell you, and for a good reason, is Bernie Rodenbaugh. Because of course he owns a bookstore.
I thought it was because you have a similar background in burglary.
not exactly, but I love anybody who owns a bookstore. He's so much different from Scudder. You know,
Yes, and he lives in an entirely different universe.
Exactly, and I. One of the things, of course, I like about him is he does refer to all sorts of great writers, and that reminds me of Carolyn Hart. You know, Carolyn Hart. Well, of course, you are a Mystery Writers of America Grandmaster, 1998, I think. Right?
I think you're probably right.
And Carolyn Hart is a Grandmaster of 2014, and she writes all those Death on Demand books. So she refers always to, you know, writers that she admires, and of course in the Bernie Rodenbaugh series, Bernie talks about writers too, and I like that.
Thank you. I have an awful lot of fun with those books. Again, it would surprise me if I found more to say about the character, but again, I never know.
Well, I think when people are looking, and I hope I get some people here, my listeners, to look at your books, and if they haven't, and or if they have, and just to be reminded to go back and the process, as I said, because of course you have always been a writer. I mean, I think it's like, was there ever a time that you weren't a writer? You know, your mind.
No, I really always have been. I started writing while I was in school. I started publishing while I was in school. I ended my college career because I was paying far more attention to the writing I was doing than to classwork, and it's what I've been doing ever since.
And you know, of course, you've developed improved and got you just keep getting better.
That's a good thing too.
Exactly, you have to, so that's why I always think of your writing as so solid, seamless, and one forgets that one is reading a book and it just jumps right in there and becomes part of the story.
That's high praise, and I thank you.
Well, it's one of the things I want to talk to you about. I want to talk to you particularly about writing. I've been lately involved in quite a few different events with people, with writers, you know, conferences and stuff, and I've had so many questions, and I want to talk to you about your book, Writing the Novel.
Certainly.
And we're going to come back in a few minutes. I have to take a little, a station break here, and just hold on, because it's I want the writers who are listening to this program to hear from you, because you know so much. We'll be right back.
I'm not sure about that, but I'll be right here for you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com. Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Lawrence Block. Now, Lawrence Block, for those who know him as a thrilling detective writer, of so many wonderful series, might not know that he has also written perhaps the best book on how to write. And hi, Larry, are you there?
I am indeed, Pat.
Well, I noticed that you, of course, everybody knows that, you know, when you, how can I say, all writers, you know, are asked always questions on what to do and how to write. And you have always been right out there helping people. And so let's talk about your book, well, the recent book that you have just put out.
Sure. It's called Writing the Novel from Plot to Print to Pixel.
And of course originally it was just from plot to print.
From just from plot to print, that's right. And I wrote the book and it was published in 1978.
Wow, and it held up. It held up.
Well, it stayed in print all those years and it was brought to my attention fairly recently that a lot has changed in the world, and certainly in the world of publishing and writing, and that while the book is still sound, and a lot of the principles of dramatic construction and that haven't changed a whole lot since Aristotle, nevertheless, the book could use some updating. So I sat down with it, and I spent a month or so working on it, and I wound up expanding it to half again its original length, from about 60,000 to 90,000 words, and adding a great deal of material on the way the publishing world has changed in recent years. I talk about the case for publishing, for self-publishing, which is an enormous change in the whole fabric of the industry, and the case against it, and how to go about it if you decide that it's for you. And in fact, as a case in point, it was my decision, and a rather easy decision to come to self-publish this book, Writing the Novel from Plot to Print to Pixel, because it was easy to do. because that way I could get the book out in a month rather than 18 months, and because I felt it would maximize my control over things, the sales, and even the income from it.
Oh, yes. I noticed that it was, of course, was done on CreateSpace. And, you know, there's so much nowadays people are, you know, torn between should they try to find an agent or should they self-publish? And I get this question all the time. And I know there's not one right answer, because it's just sort of when you're young, I generally like to encourage people to try perhaps to find an agent, because there's still a lot to be said about having an agent, isn't there?
Well, I suppose. I think an important consideration here is an important thing to focus on, is that it varies tremendously with the writer and with the book, and it's very much a personal choice. For one thing, it's certainly easier for the book to happen if you publish it yourself. Just getting an agent to read it, let alone represent it, takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, and can is a process that will have so many rejections along the way that a lot of writers will just quit. And then when an agent does have it, that's no guarantee that it'll be sold. Most agented manuscripts never get to a publisher. And if a commercial publisher takes the book on, that's absolutely no guarantee that anything will happen or that there will be a future there. If the book doesn't do well, the publisher will probably not want to do the next book that you offer. It used to be that publishers would spend a lot more time developing a writer's career. Now the nature of the corporate business is such that they can't and won't and don't. And even writers with a successful commercial track record find themselves stranded as the publisher decides that the numbers just aren't high enough and they don't want to stay with the writer. So there are strong arguments in that respect for bypassing the process and doing it yourself. And there are I'm sorry.
Yeah, there have been some tremendous successes in self-publishing recently.
There have been, and the huge successes in self-publishing, you have to discount the same way you have to discount the huge successes in commercial publishing. The great majority of self-published books will not do terribly well commercially. And that's understandable. It's also clear from research that Hugh Hoey and some other people have been doing lately that self-publishing has been commercially viable for a whole lot of writers. There are a lot of people who are making a living from it who would not be making a living otherwise. So it's an option that I think anyone starting out must consider.
And now I like to think of, you know, writers, you know, I get asked this question a lot, you know, if it gets published and, you know, is it going to sell? And I always tell writers that it doesn't sell on its own. I mean, you really have to go out there, and I know you do. I know you've done a lot of tours, you've traveled, you know, to meet people all over the country, and to promote your books. And there's a process there behind the books. You can't just hope that you're going to sell one to every library in America, and that's it.
Very true. And with self-publishing, you probably won't sell any to libraries. That's one area where your likelihood of selling is rather limited. Now, one thing that I stress in writing the novel From Plot to Print to Pixel is that all of this is in a state of constant change right now. Anyone who presumes to tell you what publishing will be like in a year doesn't know what he or she is talking about. It's changing very, very quickly. There's a fellow who's launched a project to get self-published e-books into libraries, and I don't know whether that'll fly, but there's every chance that it may. There are so many other ways in which the entire publishing landscape is in a process of constant evolution that I would be very distrustful of anybody who wants to predict the future.
Now, do you enjoy the process of going out there and you know, selling your books, meeting people?
Well, I don't do an awful lot of that, I don't know that that's as much of a factor now as it was 20 years ago. The book tours have, there are far fewer book tours than there used to be. I don't know if they ever made real economic sense, but it's now pretty clear that they don't. The internet as a vehicle for promotion of books, like of everything else, is extraordinary. So that there's a lot one can do without leaving one's office.
And, you know, do you like to do writers' conferences? Are you involved in any of those?
Not really. Very, very, very infrequently. I do speaking gigs occasionally, but not too often. I'll be speaking, I think it's a week from today, and at the library in Sanibel. As a matter of fact, I'm going to have to come back down to Florida for that. Yeah, I think it's the evening of the 12th.
Well, you should come over here to see us here in Clearwater. We're right here.
I wish I could, but it's going to be a quick down and back.
You know, when I liked that. The girl with the deep blue eyes was set here in Florida.
Right. Yes, it's in Gallatin County, which is hard to find on a map, but it's approximately sort of around Perry.
And it was so funny. I when I started reading the book something that you read, and I got to the part where he's in a motel and run by Gujarati speaking Indians, and I had to laugh because I'm working on a book set in India, and so I'm trying to learn Gujarati because that's so you don't pick that up very often, that you pick up a book and you're reading and you know, somebody mentions Gujarati, and
if you want to practice the language, just go to almost any independent motel around.
I know, and it's been fun for me to be working on that. My book is set in 1875 in India during the Victorian period. And so it's fun, but I thought, it's not something people mention very often. So you spend a lot of time in Florida?
No, not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Well, it's such a perfect place to come and I know New York is inspirational, but it's a great place for writers to come and sit back and think up the plots for their their next books.
Well, it's certainly been home to a tremendous number of writers over the years, Florida.
We have a very vibrant writing community here, and they're, you know, it's so wonderful to see all these people working so hard to try to write their books so that they, with all the things that they want to share with people, all the things that mm-hmm. As you said, some books should be definitely, you know, you don't have to wait around to try to find an agent or a publisher. If you have a book that you really want people to read and to get out there, it is a wonderful thing to have it published and to promote it yourself. And part of the fun when you have written a book, I spoke recently to a writer who wrote a book about basically our area here in Florida,
mm-hmm.
and she is so enthusiastic, and it's just so delightful to see her enthusiasm as she's going around, you know, with her book and selling not a lot of copies probably, but she's enjoying it. She's just enjoying the process.
That's terrific.
And I think you know, in your books, of course, you as I said, you're professional. You've been writing, and I'm sure you could write practically a book about, you know, anything if you set your mind to it. But there's still always, I always particularly feel there's a, you have so much fun. You have so much fun in your books because you always have even the hardest, core detective show. There's a book. There's always something. You find some humor. And you always, you know, have these plot twists, and it's what makes your writing so much fun to read.
Well, thank you. That's very nice to hear.
Well, I think you have to just have this joy in the process. That's why I named this program Joy on Paper, because first of all, it's such an accomplishment to write a book, any book. I mean, even if you just write one book,
mm-hmm.
but that
very true.
That joy of seeing your words on paper. And what you can make of them, and then to know that somewhere down the way, somebody else is, you know, will be reading these words and finding that same, you know, joy just in having the book in front of them. So, I think you must feel very, very satisfied with your life. You've won, of course, so many prizes. What's your favorite prize that you won? What are you most proud of?
Well, I suppose probably the Diamond Dagger, which was the Life Achievement Award of the given by the Crime Writers Association in the UK.
Well, not many Americans get that prize.
That's very true. They certainly were under no obligation to give me that one, and I found that very gratifying.
Well, that's the British recognized talent, let's say. So, was that fun? Did you get to go to London and receive it?
Yes, we were over there for the presentation. It was very very nice.
That's nice because it's nice to be recognized. And of course, as I said, you've won. I think it takes a long time to list all the prizes that you've won over the years.
Yeah, you know, if you just managed to keep writing and live long enough, you wind up with a lot of things hanging on the wall, Bessie. But it's gratifying.
Well, you know, from plot to print to pixel is a book that I really think all writers, especially young writers who are looking for sort of a guidance, because you don't give rules, which is
there shouldn't be any rules. Writing is not a game of rules.
Exactly. I hate those writer. You know, there a lot of people put out writers' books, and this is a rule, and this is a rule, and you must do this, and you must do that. You must use first person, or you must use. Well, of course, it was for a long time. You must use third person, and you know they would say, well, if you use first person, you're not going to ever get published. And things change. It depends on, you know, what comes
into
your head.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It depends.
And now, you're not an outliner person, are you? You don't outline?
No. I have Oh, at various times, but not in years.
Well,
I certainly don't advise against it. But I seem to be more comfortable just writing and moving on
and letting the story take over and the characters take over and sort of lead you.
Sort of, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lead you where they lead you where they would, kind mm-hmm. of thing. So
pretty much. Yeah.
Well, you know, when let's say your top three things that you would advise a writer today. Besides, we'll stay away from the publishing because, it's a choice that they're going to have to make, and a decision they're going to have to make based on what's happening. In many ways, the Shades of Grey book sort of got people's expectations so high, and so unrealistic that it's hard for people to.
So what are the three that I would, three bits of advice that I would give? First is write to please yourself. Don't write with in an attempt to please some editor or some reader or whatever that you don't know and don't know what they want anyway. But write the book that is yours to write. And the way you want to write it, and I think that's the way most successful, most artistically and commercially successful books have their origin. So write for yourself. That would be one. And that's the most important one. Another is. Don't expect too much. A lot of people can't seem to help expecting that this first book of theirs will win all the prizes and make them rich beyond the dreams of avarice. And it probably won't happen. You know, in no other artistic area do people expect to even to sell or have any audience for the first thing they do? I don't know of any singer who expected to get paid for the first song he or she sang. I don't know of any painter whose first canvas was thought worthy of hanging in a museum. But a novel is a sufficient accomplishment in and of itself that one expects it to be published and it expects it to be read and expects it to succeed. And that may not happen. And it doesn't negate the fact that having written it was an accomplishment. And that's two.
And I'll help you with the third one. I think it's persistence. You just have to keep going. You can't, just a little bit. Just keep going. Whether it's a page a day or a few pages every weekend. Just be persistent. I was amused when recently J.K. Rowling fooled her publisher. Did you hear about this story from London? She sent something into her publisher using a pseudonym, and of course her publisher rejected it and suggested that mm-hmm. she needed some writing classes. Mm-hmm. So if it can happen to J.K. Rowling's, of course her original Harry Potter, she was rejected 18 times,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't
give up.
And and so now when she did tried the same thing with her publisher and sent in a book, of course, a very well-written book, The Cuckoo's Calling. She was rejected because they didn't know it was her. Of course, once they knew it was her and they published it, it became a bestseller. But that's the whole thing. You have to be persistent. You can't give up. And just find the joy in the process as much as in the end result.
There you go. Okay, we got three.
We got three, so that's great.
Okay.
So what are you up to now? Are you traveling? I know you love to travel. What's the craziest place you travel to?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I don't know. The project I'm most excited about now is coming out late this year from Pegasus Books, and it's an anthology. Do you know about that?
No. What's that?
Oh.
What are you doing?
It's an exciting project. It's a collection called In Sunlight or in Shadow, 17 paintings by Edward Hopper and 17 stories they inspired. And let me just read you the list of writers who have turned in stories for this, and they're wonderful stories. Each picked a painting and then wrote a story that it inspired. Megan Abbott, Jill Block, Robert Olin Butler, Lee Child, Nicholas Christopher, Michael Connolly, Jeffrey Deaver, Craig Ferguson, Stephen King, Joe R. Lansdale, Gail Levin, Warren Moore, Joyce Carol Oates, Christine Catherine Rouge, Jonathan Santlofer, and Justin Scott. That's quite a lineup, and the stories are wonderful.
Oh, that sounds wonderful, and it's called what?
It's called In Sunlight or in Shadow.
In Sunlight
or in Shadow. I'm going to make sure they're going to have e-galleys very shortly, and I'll have them send you one.
Oh, wow. This sounds amazing. Exactly the kind of book I'm going to enjoy. I love short stories, and I think there aren't enough. It's a good training. I know, of course, you must have done a zillion of them.
Quite a few, yeah.
But this is a really great idea to take the paintings and to ask each of you to write a story. So, wow, that must have been thrilling for you.
Yeah, it was quite exciting. The lineup of writers. It's the premise that got them. It turns out that Edward Hopper is a favorite painter of so many writers and so many readers because there's something so. It's not exactly narrative. It's because his paintings don't tell a story as much as they suggest very strongly that there's a story there to be told. So anyway, that's what got the book to happen, and Pegasus is doing a gorgeous production with each story preceded by a reproduction of the painting.
Can you tell us which one you took? Did you?
Yes, I have a story in there, and I took a painting called, let me get the title right.
It's not the diner one, is it?
Right.
Is it the diner one? I love that diner one.
I don't know.
Nighthawks?
It's a painting called Automat. I know the one you mean, the one with diner. No, this is a woman sitting at a table in a cafeteria in New York.
Wow. This will be an exciting book. I'm going to look forward to this because I love his paintings. I've always loved his paintings, and of course, so many are evocative of New York, it's fantastic. It's a fantastic idea,
and other places too.
Exactly.
Stephen King has a story that's the painting is Room in New York, but it could be a room anywhere. Let me see. Craig Ferguson's the painting is South Truro Church, which I guess is in Cape Cod. It's just a wonderful collection. And since other people wrote the stories, I feel perfectly free in boasting about how fine they are. You know, I see no reason for me to be modest on their behalf.
Well, it's fantastic, and perhaps when the book comes out, you can come back, and maybe a few of the other authors can join you, and we can all talk about this. I just love the premise, and I hadn't heard about it, so it's...
Yeah, that'd be terrific. I would certainly like... This has been great fun, and it would certainly like to do this show again.
Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoy talking to you. And I'm going to, now that when I go to these writers' meetings, I'm going to make sure that I tell them that they have to get plot to print to pixel, because it, any book that has stood the test of time for, you know, that the advice is good and very helpful. And I know that it will be a benefit to all the writers that I meet. So I want to thank you again, Lawrence Block, for being on my program. And I encourage everyone to go to your website. It's lawrenceblock.com. Lots of information, full of information, and opportunities to buy his books, and of course to, I think, to get even an autographed one, right? Or to get some of the collector's items that are there.
Yeah, sometimes. And also there's a newsletter that they can
I love your newsletter. It is a great newsletter, and people should sign up for this newsletter because it is really super. It's one of the best newsletters. As I said, the website is great, and you have to give me information about Erin Mitchell. I have to contact her, and I want you to make sure that you come back again on the program, okay?
Terrific.
Okay. Thanks so much, Larry. Okay. Great talking
to
you.
Sure thing, Bessie.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Wow. This is it was wonderful to talk to Larry. He's, as I said, he's a solid writer. Some people, you know, it might be a little too hard hitting, some of his thrillers for some of you, but if you love really fast paced, intense thrillers, detective books, they're for you. And definitely for all the writers out there, Plot to Print to Pixel is a fantastic book, and you should get it. You will really enjoy it. And, I just want to say thank you to everyone who has sent me emails. It's been a difficult time this past week for me. For those of you who have heard, I lost one of the joys of my life, my eldest son, David. And I just want to say thank you for your kind messages to me. And please go to my website, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and you can see all of the guests that I've had on my program, and there's an archive there, so you can listen to some of my old previous programs, and I'll have Lawrence Block's interview up there tomorrow. But remember what I always say, find the joy and share it. And I say it with even more intensity today, because you never know what's going to happen. And you never know what a kind word can do, and what a good, just being good to each other can do. So I was very blessed and for 30 years. And I want all of you to find the blessing in your life, and to find the joy in your life, and to share it. Bye for now. Bye.